my brand. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for inviting me today. It has been a bit of a hectic morning, and I had a very nice tour through Chicago by my driver. Thank you. Anyway, I wanted to discuss with you today the topic of Shvatim and Tanakh, as you see on my source sheet. I was told that you are having a Yarche Kala, basically celebrating the learning of Torah. There was no one united topic, but rather just kind of a celebration of learning Torah. And I had decided that I thought a great thing to share with you was, a lot of times when we learn Torah, we look at it story by story. We analyze each story and we come out with a conclusion as to what that story was about. I think another fascinating way to learn Tanakh is as one unit, one big storyline, and see how it all plays out when you look at it as one unit. So what I wanted to do today is, using three different Shvatim, Reuven, Yosef, and Yehuda, show you how, if you start in Bereishit analyzing their personalities and their stories, you actually can see that those exact same personalities and those exact same storylines follow them throughout the entire Torah till the very end. We'll get through Malachim for each of them. And really, that there's one unit here. It's not really, you know, Bereishit separate from everything else. Everything really is one beautiful unit. So that's what I'd like to try to discuss with you today. And I picked the three tribes of Reuven, Yosef, and Yehuda because those are really our leadership tribes. Those are the ones that conflict over leadership in Bereishit, and therefore conflict over leadership throughout Tanakh as well. I'm going to go through each one at a time. If you see in my source sheet, I give you two different ways of listening to this shir. I give you a chart on the first page if you want to just sit back and enjoy and listen to me speak. You don't have to look at any of the sources inside. Or I give you lots of sources where you can actually just follow along with me through the psukim. I'm not going to read all those psukim unless you'd like me to speak here for 3 hours, which I'm fine to do, but I would miss my plane. But you have other speakers as well. But you can follow along with me, and every once in a while I'll let you know when we turn to the next page in case you do lose me. But the psukim are there, or if later you want to look at the psukim inside after listening to me give the shir, the sources are all in front of you. I want to start with Reuven. Reuven is the person that I called the should have been leader. Why he is the should have been leader is because he's the Bechor. He is the first child born to Yaakov out of the 12. But we see from the very moment he is born that that's not what's going to play out in this story. And the reason for that is because of the situation he's born into. And the situation he's born to, any psychologist knows, right, is going to affect tremendously the situation that, or the person that he is going to become. So we know right from the start that he is born into a relationship where his father and his mother have tremendous tension between them. Yaakov did not necessarily want to marry Leah. He intended to marry Rachel, ended up marrying Leah instead. And she has her first child, and look at the name of Reuven. But Tikra Shema Reuven, in the first passage I gave you, why? Because God saw me in my torture and my pain, now maybe my husband will love me. From this it is so clear that either she was not loved by Yaakov, or she perceived herself as not loved by Yaakov. Either way, that is the feeling his mother has, and that is the feeling we are going to see Reuven believes is the situation, and it tremendously affects him. We see that already in the first story. We have a very strange story in Bereishit Lamed Dalet of Reuven, a small child, we don't know the exact age, goes out into the field and picks these dudaim types of flowers and brings it to his mother, and that causes this fight between Rachel and Leah. I want the flowers. Well, then you have to trade a night with Yaakov for me to get the flowers. What is going on in this story? Why do we care Reuven brought his mother flowers? The Mefarshim debate as to what is the significance of the flowers, and I think both ways are very telling to us about Reuven. We're focusing on Reuven, not Rachel and Leah, which is either these are flowers, as Ibn Ezra brings down, Sfarno brings down, that help women to be able to get pregnant. If that's true, that clearly is telling us Reuven was aware of his mother's situation, knew she was in pain, knew that the more children she would have, the better her situation would be, which we clearly do see in the psukim, that the more children she had, the happier her namings of them were. Clearly she seemed to be happy. Reuven was aware of this. He was not oblivious to it, and therefore he was trying to help his mother along by bringing her flowers to be able to have more children. The other way of looking at this story, like the Ramban, like Radak, is these are just flowers. These are just pretty flowers. So what do I care? Why is Reuven bringing his mother pretty flowers? Well, like any child who brings his mother pretty flowers, either because he sees his mommy is very sad and he wants to cheer up his mommy, so he brings her flowers to say, "Mommy, cheer up, here's some beautiful flowers," right? And therefore, again, we see that Reuven is sensitive and is understanding of Leah's situation and is trying to help it. Or it's a child who's saying, "Mommy, here's, give me attention, Mommy. Look, here's flowers, I want your attention." The fight with Leah and Yaakov, or the tension between them, is causing Reuven to feel very left out, possibly not even by his father, but also by his mother as well. We then continue this storyline, and again we see very obviously Reuven is not considered the chosen oldest child of Yaakov that he thinks he should be, which is in Bereishit Lamed Gimel, where clearly when Yaakov is meeting up with Esav, and he's very scared that something is going to occur when he meets up with Esav, Esav might kill some of them, he puts his children and wives in a very specific order, guarding those in the back the most. And even though Reuven's not pushed in the front, because that would be much worse, he's in the middle, as we see from the Psukim. Rachel and Yosef are in the back, clearly showing Reuven knows as a fact his father prefers Yosef over himself. And that leads us to the strangest Reuven story that we have in the Psukim in Bereishit Lamed Hey, where all of a sudden, out of the blue, we have these words, Vayelach Reuven Vayishkavet Bilha Pilegesh Aviv. Reuven goes, and Vayishkav in Tanakh means he had relations with Bilha, the Pilegesh, the lower level wife of his father. The question goes on, what is going on? What is the meaning of this story? And again, there are two different views within the Mefarshim as to how to understand this story. Is it he switched the beds around, right? Meaning again, that would show us, right, he was aware, Rachel died, and he was aware that his father had now chosen Bilha, the maid of Rachel, over his mother. So he went and he switched the beds. Unclear, did he take Bilha's bed out of Yaakov's tent? Did he put Yaakov's tent into Leah's tent? Unclear what's being inferred by the Mefarshim here. But the point is, he's aware of a very bad situation that's going on between his father and his mother, and he believes he needs to get involved because he feels her pain, and he feels it too, in that he feels slighted, that his mother is being slighted by his father. Or, of course, the more pshat way to go, which we find in Radak, which is, no, he literally had relations with Bilha. And the question that comes here is, why would he do something like that, right? He wants his father's attention, he wants his father to love him. Why would he do something like that? And I think in order to understand that, you have to look at the three different stories that I brought up to you from Shmuel Bet and from Malachim Aleph, where we have stories that are very similar to this. And I think from those stories we can understand what's going on here, which is Shaul. I'll just tell you the stories outside. Shaul, who is the king of the Jewish people, dies, and his son Ishbosheth takes over. This is before David becomes king. But Shaul's general, Avner, is still the general, because he did not die. And one day, Avner is, you know, helping out Ishbosheth, and Ishbosheth turns to him in Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel and screams at him, "Madua batel pilegesh avi? Why did you sleep with my father's pilegesh?" Now, whether he did or whether he didn't, we don't know from the psukim, but Avner's reaction is so crazy. His reaction is, "You accuse me of that? Fine, I'm ditching you and I'm going to David," and he waves goodbye to Ishbosheth, taking all the other shvatim with him to unite under the kingdom of David, who was at that time only the king of Yehuda. In Shmuel Bet, we have a similar very odd story. David's son, Avshalom, who is rebelling against David, as part of his rebellion, he chases his father out of the palace. David had left 10 of his pilagshim to, you know, guard the house or take care of the house, and Avshalom goes, takes them to the roof of the house and rapes 10 of his father's pilagshim. Weird, right? And the final story that I have here, Malachim Aleph, where Shlomo has now become king, and his older brother, Adoniyahu, was trying to become king. Shlomo told him, "If you behave, I won't bother you." And Adoniyahu then goes and requests to be able to marry Avishag, who's that woman that would lie with David to keep him warm, requests to marry her. And Shlomo's reaction is, "You want to be king? Kill you." And he kills him. And the question is, all these three stories, what is going on? And clearly what we're seeing here is that having a relations with the father's Pilegesh is basically saying, "I'm taking over for the father." That's what Shlomo was saying. Adoniyahu is not just saying, "I want to marry Avishag." He's saying, "I want to be king." And that is what Avshalom was saying when he raped his father's Pilegesh. "I deserve to be king." So too was Avner, if he really did sleep with Ritzpah, with Shaul's Pelegesh, he was saying, I deserve to be king, not you, Ishbosheth. And that's why when Ishbosheth accused him, he got so mad and he barged away. So to hear, possibly according to the Pshat of Radak, which is that he really did sleep with Bilhah, it's Reuven standing up for himself for the first time saying, I deserve the status that you're not giving me. You're clearly giving it to a different brother, Yosef, we're going to discuss next. You're not giving it to me. I need to grab hold of it and I need to do something that makes me show that I deserve that. Of course, it's a totally twisted way to do it. Reuven does not think through that this is not a very good way, in that his father does not react very well to this situation. However, Reuven clearly is trying to say, I deserve something that you have not given me. The next story we see of Reuven, again, helping us to develop Reuven as a character, is in Bereishit Lamed Zayin. In Bereishit Lamed Zayin, we have the story of the selling of Yosef. In the story of selling of Yosef, Reuven plays a big part, because Yosef is walking down towards his brothers, and the brothers start talking, ooh, let's kill him, oh, let's do this, and Reuven gets up and says, no, let's not kill him, rather, let's throw him in a pit. And the brothers do listen to him for a moment in time, and they do throw Yosef into a pit. What's very interesting about this story is we actually can learn a lot about Reuven, because the pasuk tells us what the intention of Reuven was. The pasuk tells us, Leman hitzila tomi adam hashivol aviv. He wanted to return Yosef back to his father, which means his intention was to save Yosef. But what it shows us is, though he has very good intention, and I think we learned something about Reuven from here, he's a good intentioned person, but he just kind of goes off in the wrong direction sometimes. He didn't have the ability to say, no, don't touch him. Leave him alone. He didn't. He wants to be the leader of the brothers, but he clearly isn't, because he can't even stand up for himself to say what he actually really thinks they are supposed to do. Plus, on top of that, the ending is a little bit strange when finally he comes back to the pit and Yosef's gone and he doesn't know what's going on, and he says to his brothers in Pasuk Lamed, Va'ani ananiba, what will be with me? And you gotta wonder, what does that mean? What will be with me? What are you trying to say here? And you gotta wonder, is it really that it's all altruistic on his part, that he really wanted to save Yosef? Or did he realize, if something happens to Yosef, I'm the oldest, I'm going to get blamed, and it's all about him in terms of the fact that he wants to look good to his father. So it's all about Reuven trying to say to his father, look at me, and it's all about his father not looking in his direction, and him trying to get attention in the wrong way. The next time we hear Reuven, also interesting, is down in Mitzrayim. The brothers are facing off with Yosef. Yosef called them spies, he threw them into jail, he's doing all these terrible things to them, and Reuven turns to his brothers. And Mem Bechafbe, you're following with me. Vayan Reuven Otam Lemor, Halo Amarti Aleichem Lemor, Al Tachzu Beyalav Lo Shematem. Didn't I tell you don't hurt them? And you didn't listen. Now you got to wonder here. He never said that. What? Did I miss that in the Psukim? No, they're not in the Psukim. So you got to wonder, did it happen or didn't it happen? So if he really didn't say it, well, then that's Reuven saying, I meant to say it. I wanted to say it. That's what I intended to say, but I wasn't strong enough to say it. Again, showing he wants to be that leader, but he clearly is not. If he did say it, then you have to say that's when he said, Lo nakenu nefesh, right? Let's not kill him. And then, of course, he wasn't strong enough to hold on to that, and then he had to change his mind and say, okay, let's throw him in the pit instead. Either way, we see Reuven not being able to carry out what he really intended, and he also is not being a leader here as well, because he's not coming up with a plan. He's just saying, it's your fault. That's it. That's all he says. Your fault. I don't know. You deal with it. It's your fault. Which is not a way of a leader at all. But they needed him to get up and come up with a plan, and he clearly does not. The last time we hear of a Reuven story is now the brothers come back to Yaakov, and they say, Yaakov, we have been told by this strange man that's leading Egypt that we can't come back unless we bring our youngest brother Binyamin with us. And now the brothers are trying to convince Yaakov, please let us take Binyamin down. And Yaakov clearly doesn't want to. That's his favorite child. He doesn't want to because Yosef is now gone. He doesn't want to get rid of Binyamin. And Reuven is the first to approach. Again, in Reuven's mind, he's the leader. He's got to get up and he's got to do it. But again, he fails because Reuven doesn't know how to be what he actually wants to be. Why does he fail? One of two reasons. Either because what he says, if you look at Membet Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Vayomer Reuven el Aviv Lemor, et shnei banai tamit im lo avienu elecha. You could kill my two sons if I don't bring them to you. Well, grandfather's going to be like, yes, please, kill my son, now kill my two grandchildren. Right? So Rashi calls this, he calls the Bechor Shote. He says, this is stupidity, what Reuven was saying. Of course, Yaakov refused. Or you could say, say, no, really what he was saying was just, you know, I'll be punished for generations, not that you'll actually kill my children. And as Rambam points out, he was really only rejected because Yaakov said, I don't trust you. You as a person, you want that leadership role, you want me to trust you, but I really just don't. Your personality is not the type of personality that I can trust. And therefore, we see here a clear rejection from his father. And to conclude the Reuven stories, we see it in his bracha from Yaakov so beautifully, a nice sum up of what we're seeing from Reuven. He starts off in Mempet, Reuven, Bechori ata kochi v'roshi oni, you, reshit oni, you were the Bechor, you had all the potential, you had everything. And then, yeter seif, yeter oz, you had the excellence of dignity, the excellence of power, you had it all. But then you messed up, is what he's saying. Pachas kamay maltota ki alita mishkeve avicha, az chilat yisir alav, you are unstable as water, and you shall not excel because of what you did. Again, how to translate those words exactly depends on how you understand the story. You went up on your father's bed, and therefore you are now punished. So what we see here very clearly about Reuven, which is just so fascinating, is Reuven has this desire to be the leader. He feels he should be the leader. He's the Bechor, but he doesn't have leadership qualities whatsoever. He blames people. He tries to get up, and nobody listens to him. And clearly nobody seems to trust him at all. And a lot of times his plans don't work out very well because he doesn't know how to see them through to the end, and he doesn't think them through at all. Reuven and the rest of Tanakh, therefore, fits very beautifully into this because we don't have any leaders from Reuven in Tanakh, which makes a lot of sense because he can't lead. But we do have two very, very big stories of Reuven stories that fit so beautifully into his type of personality. Number one, I gave you here that he is the head of a degel. He is the head of one of the travel orders, right? So he is a leader. In some sense, he is the Bechor, but he is not the head degel, right? Yehuda has one, Ephraim has one. But the big stories of Reuven is, number one, this week's Parsha, Datan V'Aviram, this past week's Parsha. Datan V'Aviram are a major part of this rebellion of Korach, but clearly as you start going through the Psukim, you see a number of things. They're not the head of the rebellion, because every time Korach's yelling, Datan V'Aviram are at home, and Moshe's got to go to their house to go talk to them. They're not even there, right? So what type of head of rebellion is that? So it's a Reuven saying, oh, I'm going to lead the rebellion. They don't even lead the rebellion. And on top of that, it makes a lot of sense. If you look through the Psukim there, Korach is rebelling. I don't think Aaron should have been the Kohen Gadol. We all could be the Kohen Gadol. Datan Aviram's rebellion is very different. Datan Aviram's rebellion is, we don't believe in your authority, Moshe. They're attacking Moshe. They don't even mention Aaron, not even one time. And their showdown is with Moshe. He faces them off at the end and clearly wins when the ground kind of swallows them up, which is a really nice showdown. But Datan Aviram have an authority problem. And that works with the Reuven personality. They perceive themselves as leaders. We should lead. How dare somebody else lead instead of us? But even in their own rebellion, they can't even lead, which is just so ironic about the Reuven character. So too in the second type of rebellion of Reuven, which is the rebellion of Reuven and God asking to live Me'ever LeYarden on the other side of Eretz Yisrael, which of course clearly gets rejected by Moshe in the very beginning, assuming that they are trying to break away. And they have to, you know, define terms and come up with a compromise. But in a lot of ways, to me, it makes a lot of sense. God and Reuven were the ones who wanted to do this. Chatzi Shem Menashe only get added on later by Moshe and the Psukim. They're not even in the beginning of the negotiations. God is the Bechor of Zilpah, and Reuven is the Bechor of Leah. And both of them kind of feel like, we need our space. We need to lead ourselves. We need some autonomy. We want to move a little bit away from the rest of you. But again, about Reuven, if you look at the Psukim, which I gave you here, I'm just going to, you don't have to look if you don't want to, but in Pasuk Bet, and it continuously through the story, B'nai God is referred to before B'nai Reuven. And that's just weird. All the Mefarshim pick up on that. Always the children of the main wives come before the children of the maid servants. And the Mefarshim pick up, like Ramban and others, that even in this rebellion, again, Reuven was not the leader. God started the rebellion, and Reuven went, oh, good idea. I'll come too. Yeah, good one. You know, like that. And of course, it's not surprising that then in Sefer Yehoshua, when God and Reuven build a Mizbeach, when they go back from Eved LeYarden, the entire Jewish nation gets up together to go fight a war against them because they assume right away, oh, they're rebelling. That was their plan the whole time, right? They tricked us. They're really rebelling. They're breaking away. And again, compromises have to be made in discussion with Pinchas gets involved to be able to explain that that's not what's really going on. So the tragedy of Reuven here in so many ways is that he had the, I guess, potential in that he was the oldest child, but he had none of the qualities that could make him into a leader. And from the very beginning, you know, he was fighting for something that he never could get. And we see that from the beginning to the very end. And that's really all of our Reuven characters that we have. Next up is the character of Yosef, who is everything Reuven wanted to be, right? Reuven was the oldest and wanted to be be the favorite, and Yosef was the favorite of his father. And that's very clear from the Pesukim. If you now go to where Yosef comes up in your source, he's Bereishit Lamed Zayin. Number of clues to us, or really big hints, glaring in our faces, that he was the favorite child. Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, right there. These are the generations of Yaakov. Where's Reuven, Shimon? No, Yosef, right? Everyone's telling me, Ela told us, we have a listing of children. Here, Yosef, because that was most important to Yaakov. Also, on top of that, it says very clearly in Pasuk Gimel, V'Yisrael Havet Yosef Mikol Banav. Can't get clearer than that. Yaakov loved Yosef more than all his other sons. That is very clear. Can't argue that. And on top of that, V'Asala Ketona Pasim, he makes him a special coat. So not only does Yaakov maybe secretly tell Yosef, you're really my favorite, he then now has a coat that he walks around with saying, ha ha, I'm the favorite. Okay, so everyone knows he is clearly the favorite. We know that also from going back to Bereishis Lamed Gimel, which would be the next source on your sheet as well, which is, again, when they're facing off with Esav, as I said before, Yosef and Rachel are all the way in the back. They are clearly the favorite. Yosef picks up on this, and this becomes a major part of his personality. He dreams of being a leader. He dreams of being in control, right? We all know his dreams. The sheaves are bowing down to him, the sun and the moon and the stars are bowing down to him. And it's very clear from the Pesukim what he is saying, because the brothers say to him, oh, do you really think you're going to rule us? And basically there's no response, because Yosef's like, yeah, I do, you know? And the brothers are like, yeah, that's not very good. He believes it, he thinks it, and his entire personality is about that. But what we see in a problem of Yosef is similar to Reuven, is that he also doesn't think things through to the very end. You know, if you're the youngest child of a group of very strong older boys, and you go around rubbing in their faces, oh, I'm going to be the king and I'm going to rule you. If you felt that out a little bit, you'd realize they're not going to like you very much. And if you knew they're not going to like you very much, you knew that they're going to have some issues with you. And, I mean, he might not have thought they would do what they did, but was not so smart in the way that he acted towards them. But what's interesting is that even though in his head he's the leader, even though in his father's head he's the chosen, in his brother's minds he's the opposite. And they demonstrate that to him very clearly in the Pesukim, in Bereishit Lamed Zayin, if you're following, from Pesukim Chaf Gimel, Chaf Chet, when they sell him. The Pesukim describe Yosef in the most passive way possible. I'm now on the third page if you are following. And the most passive way possible. There's no action of Yosef in any Pesukim. We don't have anywhere where the Pesuk says, and Yosef screamed, and Yosef said, please, no. It's completely passive. Pesuk of Gimel, Vayipshitu et Yosef et Ketonato. They take off his coat. Pesuk of Dav, Vekachu Vayishlichu al Habora. They grab him, and they throw him into the pit. Chaf Chet, Vayimshichu Vayalu et Yosef min Habor, Vayimkeru et Yosef. They grab him, whoever that is, Mijayim of the brothers. They take him out of the pit, and they sell him as a slave. Vayaviu et Yosef Mitzrayim. He gets brought down to Mitzrayim. He is completely passive. All the, you know, dreams of leadership just gets completely squashed here, as he has no authority over his brothers whatsoever. However, Yosef's life is not over. Yosef's life is fascinating because he's got ups and downs and ups and downs, and as we'll see in his history, so does his, you know, descendants have ups and downs as well, where he has a pretty big low. He is now sold down to Mitzrayim. He is a slave in Potiphar's house, the lowliest of the low. But as we all know, soon he charms his way up to the top, and he becomes Vayith Gadeo Beito Kol Bechol Yesh Lo Natan Biyado. He has everything. Potiphar gives him everything that is in his home, and he's in charge of everything. He got a little down there where Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him, and he runs away, and then she kind of twists the story and makes him look very bad. And now he's got it down again. He's back in jail, and his life seemingly is over. But the next thing we know, he's back up again. He charms the person in charge of the jail, and now he's in charge of all the prisoners. And then the next thing we know, he's in jail for a while, but now he gets brought to the king, and now he becomes the second of the king. I mean, Yosef is unbelievable, you know? I think we learn a lot of things about Yosef from these stories, which is number one. He has a desire for power and a desire for leadership. And as we saw before, there's a negativity to that. You take it to the extreme, and you shove it in people's faces, you get rejected. But on the other hand, there's a positive, extreme positive to it, which is you have ambition. You have a goal in your life that you know you must achieve. And therefore Yosef said, I'm a slave in Potiphar's house, I'm going to get to the top. I'm a little nothing in jail, I'm going to get to the top. The only way Yosef could have made himself rise to the top was because he believed. He believed, I'm a leader, I'm going to get there no matter what. He made himself get to the top. There's a positive and a negative in this desire for leadership that we find in Yosef, and it will continue throughout as well. He proves he is a good leader in that in Mitzrayim he does save us from a famine. He certainly does. He's able to collect all the food and then give it all back when people need the food. But what's also very clear in all these stories is that he is always a number two. Yosef, and as we will see throughout history, is never number one in control. Yosef is always second to somebody else. He's second to Potiphar, second in jail, second to Paro, always number two. And of course, it's a process of him learning to be okay with that. But we do see that he is growing in the sense that at home, he wanted to be number one all the time. And here in Mitzrayim, he's able to accept his status as number two. Another interesting thing we see about his personality in a lot of his stories is that even though he had all the power and he had all the, you know, anything he wanted, right? And his brothers come down to Mitzrayim. I mean, we're not going to discuss what he does to them precisely because that would take us a whole other shir. But to me, what's so fascinating is that he breaks down crying three and then four different times. It's fascinating. He had all the control. He had all the everything. And he's the one who has to constantly be excusing himself in the room to break down to tears. There's a vulnerability in Yosef. There's a softness in him. You could call it a weakness or you could call, again, it's not a negative or a positive. It's both in a lot of ways. But he breaks down when he hears the brothers admitting that they really sold him and they're sorry that they sold him to Mitzrayim. He breaks down again when he sees Binyamin for the first time. He breaks down again when Yehuda defends Binyamin, and he breaks down at the very, very end, and I'll discuss that story in a second. He breaks down over and over again, an emotional vulnerability in Yosef that's clearly there. Then we move to Perek Memzah, which I don't believe I gave on the story. It's a whole, it's like 15, 16 psukim. I'll just explain to you what I'm talking about here, where we have the discussion of Yosef basically taking over the wealth of Mitzrayim. They're buying back food from Yosef, and the story tells us how they come back and they give them all their money, and now they ran out of money. And they come crying, "We're out of money, you can have our animals." And he takes all their animals. Now they're out of animals. They go, "We don't know what to do. We'll give you all our land. We'll be your slave. We don't care. Just give us food. We're starving." And there's a lot of different ways of looking at that story, and I think you could take it from two different extremes. You could take that story again of showing the corruption of Yosef to the end, where he went a little bit too far, taking everything that they owned, and these are people that gave him the food to begin with, and you can understand why, you know, his family who's living in Goshen is doing so well and so happy, and they don't pay a cent, and they who gave him all the food now are starving, and he moves them around to different lands. They don't even own their own land anymore, that they are not very happy with Yosef, and we don't see that until, of course, Shemos, when all of a sudden you wonder, why does Mitzrayim hate us so much, and you wonder if somewhere in there was a lack of planning on his part of seeing the future of what he was doing could become. Or on the other hand, you could look at the Perek, and all over the Perek, 10 times it writes the words Leparo, Leparo, Leparo. Everything he did was for Paro. And the question is, what is that trying to show us? And maybe at the end it's trying to show us the opposite. It's trying to show us the growth of Yosef. Yosef was okay with being second to Paro. Everything he wanted was not his plan. It wasn't for him. He wasn't taking any of it. He wasn't gaining anything from it. It was all for Paro. And maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's that we see a growth in Yosef saying, I'm okay with being number two. I learned my lessons when my brother sold me that striving always to be number one and kick everyone else out is not so good. And I think the growth of Yosef you see so beautifully in the very, very end of the story in Bereishit Nun, which is just such a sad ending. But Yaakov dies, and in Perek Nun, the brothers come to Yosef crying. Dad told us that you shouldn't hurt us, right? Which we don't even know if Dad ever told them anything, or they're just making that up so Yosef wouldn't do anything. And they come crying to him, "We'll be your slave," and they bow. And this is the moment in history where Yosef's dreams are right there. They know it's Yosef. They are bowing to him, and they are offering themselves as slaves to Yosef. And what does he do? He cries. And he says, "No, that's not what I want at all. Get up." And the psukim tells at the end, he comforts them instead of them comforting him. There is a growth in Yosef. He understands that power to the extreme is not good, though he does have the ability to get corrupted by it. But he understands by the end of Bereishit, which is so beautiful, that that's not what he wants. He just wants to become part of Am Yisrael. And that's why I think the bracha at the end of Yaakov is also so fascinating. Because the whole way through, we were like, Yaakov likes Yosef the best. Yaakov likes Yosef best. He's getting it all. But at the very end, he does get in Bereishit Memchet Pasuk Hey, he does get the Bechorah status. He gets the oldest child status. As we know, because he says to him, Ephraim and Benasha, Kiruvin v'Shimon Yuli. Your two sons will be like tribes. So we know when they got land in Israel. Ephraim and Manasseh got two separate territories as opposed to everyone else who only got one. So certainly he got the Bechoros as the favorite child status, but he does not get the Melucha. He does not get the leadership status. That's going to go to Yehuda, our next figure, because Yosef doesn't deserve the leadership status. He clearly wasn't the leader of his brothers the entire time at all, or ever, I really should say. He certainly had leadership qualities that he showed in Mitzrayim, whether we think that they were totally good or we think that there was even negativity there, but he certainly does not have a leadership ability over his brother, so he does not get the bracha of leadership. But throughout Tanakh, he's not like Reuven, he's not gone, and it makes sense because he shouldn't be gone. He had good qualities, he was a leader in Mitzrayim, and he certainly saved his family from famine. He is all over Tanakh, and as I said to you before, he likes leadership. So anytime there's a lull in the leadership role, Yosef is going to push through, and that's a good thing, because when we don't have a leader, we need someone who's going to push through and say, oh, I'll lead, I volunteer. And that's Yosef. So when we get to the rest of Torah, Shemot through Devarim, Yosef's really pretty much out of the picture. We have strong leaders, Moshe, Aaron from Levi, and we're going to see we're going to have a lot of Yehuda characters as well, but we really have nothing from Yosef. We have Bnei Safchad, who wants their piece of land because their father only had daughters, so that's from Menashe, from Yosef. And of course, we have Menashe who gets upset because now Bnei Safchad is going to take that piece of land and marry somebody else, and they're going to lose their land, which clearly we see this desire for land and desire, to keep what they have in Menashe, which we will see throughout history as well. But we really have almost nobody from Yosef whatsoever, except for, of course, Yehoshua. Yehoshua begins in Torah, but his major role is, of course, Sefer Yehoshua, where he leads the Jewish people. And though he is a tremendous leader of Am Yisrael, certainly so, as the Pesukim tell us in Yehoshua Chavdalad, as the summary of the leadership of Yehoshua, Vayavod Yisrael et Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua. We serve God the entire time. He was a fantastic leader. But there are so many qualities in Yehoshua that remind us so strongly of Yosef. Number one, as I said about Yosef, he's always number two. Yehoshua, clearly his entire life is number two to Moshe. Even when Moshe is dead and he is the leader, he is still the Misharis, I guess I would say, the second to, the helper of Moshe. And the Pesukim call him that over and over again, the Misharis Moshe. On top of that, when we first meet him, he is literally the Misharis Moshe. He is the one in the war against Amalek who fights the war, while Moshe is really, doing the war from on top of the mountain with his hands up in the air. He goes to Har Sinai with Moshe, goes up part way, right? When Moshe separates after Chet Egel, he goes with him, But Yehoshua, even when he becomes the leader, in order to become the leader, Moshe puts his hands on him and gives him from his ruach, as the pasuk says, v'samachtas yadecha alav, puts his hands on him because he's a continuation of Moshe. He's not his own person. And his whole life, he's living the footsteps of Moshe. Splits the sea, just like Moshe. Sends meraglim, just like Moshe. Everything he does is just like Moshe. And I think the best pasuk to summarize Yehoshua up is found in Yehoshua Yud Aleph, pasuk Tevav. It's on your source, and I'll read it to you. Ka'asher siva Hashem et Moshe avdo, kein siva Moshe et Yehoshua, Chayna saw Yehoshua lo hisir davar mikol asher siva Hashem es Moshe. Just like God commanded Moshe, so too Moshe commanded Yehoshua, and that's what Yehoshua did. And he never turned at all from what God told Moshe to do. Yehoshua was really, commanded everything that he was supposed to do from Moshe, and Moshe from Hashem. He was always the second-hand man of Yehoshua, of Moshe, fulfilling the job that Moshe was not able to do when Moshe was told he was not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. On top of that, there is an emotional vulnerability in Yehoshua that we saw in Yosef as he cries numerous times. Yehoshua clearly has this quality as well. Number one, before he can be a spy, he's one of our 12 spies, right? Moshe has to change his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua to give him extra strength to be able to stand up to Meraglim. On top of that, in the story of Meraglim, if you read through the Pesukim there, when the Meraglim come back, the 10, and say a bad story, Yehoshua doesn't stand up. Moshe doesn't stand up very much, and even our Kalev is the one, Yehuda. That's going to make sense to us in a little bit. But Yehoshua really stands very silent. He's not strong enough to stand up to the Meraglim. And on top of that, it's fascinating, but the only person in Tanakh that this is true for, there are 8 times in the Pesukim that we tell Yehoshua, Chazak v'yematz, be strong. Chazak v'yematz. 4 times in Devarim from Moshe, 4 times in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, sometimes by Jews, sometimes by God, Chazak v'yematz. v'mas, chazak v'mas. You don't say chazak v'mas to someone who's strong. You don't say that. They don't need to hear it. You say it to someone who is terrified, to someone who is feeling a weakness, and therefore you have to say to them, you're going to be okay. Now, we don't blame Yoshua. He took over for Moshe. I don't think any of us would really like to do that, but on that, he really does have those traits of Yosef, again, second, and with that, a little bit of a vulnerability, and I think also we might be able to claim a little bit of the non-foresight that Yosef had of not finishing something or taking it to the end and seeing the result. If you look at the pasuk in Shoftim Bet, which I gave you, Pesukim Chaf to Chaf Bet, the Pesukim in Shoftim are telling us why the time of Shoftim is so bad. It's because we didn't kill out all of our enemies living in Eretz Yisrael. There's still a lot left. We were supposed to get rid of them. And the pasuk, in a little bit of a way, gives a blame to Yehoshua. At the very end, it says, "Asher azav Yehoshua vayamot." These are the enemies that Yehoshua left over before he died. Meaning, Yehoshua should have made sure before he died, every last enemy of ours in Eretz Yisrael was totally annihilated and destroyed and kicked out, so that we wouldn't have had the horrible problems of Sefer Shoftim and on. But he doesn't, and there's again a little bit of that weakness that he didn't feel he could push and push and push, and not knowing the consequences, which of course are really quite bad. And I just fascinating to put in at the end, it happens to be that him and Yosef both lived to 110, the only two people in all of Tanakh that both lived to 110, and the Pesukim tell us that twice, which is interesting. Both Yosef tells us he lived to 110 twice, and Yoshua, I find that very interesting as well. So Yoshua, a tremendous leader, but has many of the Yosef characteristics. We move on with Yosef and Tanakh, because there's a tremendous amount. In the time of Yoshua, we have another Yosef story, where B'nai Yosef come demanding for Yoshua to give them more land. Again, a story of Yosef saying, I require more, I think I need my land, like Menashe in the story of Benos Lefchan, and of course them being rejected there as well. Time period of Shoftim comes up, and we are full of Yosef characters. We're not going to discuss them all, but I will list them to you. Devorah, who is from Ephraim, leads for 40 years. Gidon, who's from Menashe, leads for 40 years. And I want to point him out because I think he really has tremendous Yosef characteristics. He certainly has a vulnerability, a weakness. He needs four signs from God to be able to go out to battle. God gives him one, I'm still scared. Two, still scared. Three, still scared. God says, if you're still scared, here's number four. I mean, it's fascinating. He's really, really terrified. And he also does not understand, thinking to the end of his actions. At the very end of his life, he builds this ephod, this kind of monument to thank God for the victory that they had, and it ends up turning into a avodah zarah, and the Jewish people serve it as a avodah zarah. He didn't think that out too clearly either. At the end of his story also, the sons of Ephraim come yelling at Gidon, why didn't you invite us to war? Again, there's this feeling of Menashe and Ephraim and Yosef, we want to be involved in all the war, we want to get all the booty, we want to get all the results at the end, we want to get all the status of saying that, you know, we fought in all the wars. There's this, again, it's a good because they lead, but it's a bad because they want it too much. Sometimes it leads to problems. And of course, our first problem comes up is our next Shofet, Avimelech, the son of Gidon. This is a man who calls himself Avimelech. You tell by his name, my father is king, meaning I want to be king. Okay, how does he become king? Sounds like Yosef in the beginning, but then veers very far from Yosef. He is the son of a different mother than the rest of his brothers, and there's lots of brothers. And he is not treated so nicely by his brother, doesn't like his brothers, and he wants to lead all of them, but he then takes a bad turn where he kills all of his brothers and then anoints himself as king. Too far. I mean, he takes the Yosef corruption way too far. And of course, thank God, a woman drops a stone on his head and does kill him, which everyone should be grateful for. Ya'ir HaGiladi, next, we don't know much about him. He's from Yosef, rules for 22 years. Then we move to Yiftach, which we're just seeing Shoftim really is so full of Yosef. 6 years. Yiftach as well reminds us so much of Yosef. Yiftach is this man, if you look, I'm in Shoftim Yud Aleph, if you're following, he is also, I'm sorry, I already turned to the fourth page, I apologize, I didn't say that. Yiftach is a son of a different mother as well, and because of that, his brothers get so jealous of him, they throw him out of the house. Same story as Yosef, they don't like him, they get rid of him, and then of course, after a while, they get into trouble, and they come begging Yiftach, come back and lead us, just like the brothers come begging to Yosef, come back and save. They don't know it's Yosef, but they do end up begging to Yosef, come back and save, and Yiftach's response is, I will, if Anochi Eyalech Al HaRosh, if you'll let me be your leader. There's a desire to lead here that he has, which makes him, of course, come back. And him also, I'd say, has the characteristic of not thinking things through. As we know, the famous story at the end of Yiftach's life, which is, he makes a swear that if I win the war, the first thing that comes out of my front door, I will sacrifice to God. And sadly, his daughter comes out. Did not think that out. The next thing that we have is in the story of Yiftach, again, Ephraim comes complaining, why didn't you invite me to war? And here's where we really see, again, the corruption of desiring leadership so badly come to the extreme, because what that happens because of that, Ephraim comes yelling at Menasseh, why didn't you invite me? We see this war of Ephraim and Menasseh. Devorah and Yoshua was from Ephraim, and now Gideon and Yiftach and Abdon, all of them were from Menasseh. So now it's like this, who's the leader? They actually have a civil war that occurs right now, and Ephraim loses 42,000 people to Menasseh. The extreme desire for power takes a really bad turn here at the end of Sefer Shoftim, where a civil war occurs between these two brothers, Menasseh and Ephraim, and it gets very, very nasty. Abdon, also from Yosef, another Shofet for 8 years, and just to end Sefer Shoftim with the famous story of Pesel Micha. Micha, who builds a Pesel in his home, and then complicated story. But anyway, again, the point of that story, again, of the characteristic of Micha, is why did he build a pestle in his house, right? Because he wanted people to come to his house and worship in his house so he can have the power of people coming to him. All of these people having the same characteristics. I want to lead, some excellent leaders, some take it way too far. And again, we see a lot of these characteristics of Yosef, of vulnerability, weakness, not thinking things all the way to the end in a lot of these characters. And I end with the final Yosef character of Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeravam is the king that takes over at the very, very end, right? We have now a long period of downtime of Yosef, right? No Yosef characters. Shmuel, Eli from Levi. We then have kings, Shaul, Binyamin, and then we have Yehuda rises, right? David, Shlomo, Rehavam. All of a sudden, now there's a down. We are having issues. We need a leader that's a little more sympathetic to us. Rehavam's being a little bit too harsh. Comes along Yosef to pull it all away, and he comes and he takes away 10 tribes away from the Melucha of David, the Melucha of Yehuda, comes along a Yosef character. And again, the corruption of Yosef comes into play with Yeravam as well. In the beginning, yes, everyone seems to like him for around a few psukim, but then a few psukim in, all of a sudden, Yeravam says, I don't want everyone going back to the Beis HaMikdash and returning to Yehuda. I want the power for myself. He starts building Bamo, Mizbeach, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and all of a sudden, Avodah Zarah is being worshipped, and everything turns to the bad once again, until of course, all the kings from Yosef at this point go downhill until they go off to Gullus first. So the Yosef character has tremendous potential. He's the favorite. He therefore has the desire for leadership. He wants it. He is a good leader at certain times. There are certainly many Yosef characters that are very, very good leaders, but they have some issues. Number one, we have lots of ups and downs where they come in history and then they drop out of history. They have an emotional vulnerability at times. And then they don't always see to the end of what, you know, their plan or what was what they were intending to do. And therefore, you know, they have strong leadership, but many times in history where their leadership can cause some sort of corruptions. I see I'm running out of time, so I gotta move. I will not move faster. We'll just keep talking. Yehuda, I actually can.
Oh, no.
Anyway, Yehuda. Yehuda, I would call the natural leader, the ideal leader of the Jewish people. And we see that right away from the very, very beginning. When he is born, the atmosphere in his home is very different. Leah is still the not favorite mother, but his naming is Hapam Odes Hashem. This time I'm thankful. He's born into a different house. It's not as sad. It's not as depressing. It's not as unloved. He is born into a different home, creating a different character in him. The first time we hear of Yehuda is really not for a while until Mechiras Yosef. And as we know, Yehuda is the one who says, let's sell Yosef. But what's fascinating about that, not the best of decisions or the nicest of decisions, is the pasuk concludes Vayishmu Achav. We have Reuven who said, throw him in a pit. We have Yosef, who we know from later psukim, which I gave you, Mem Bechaf Aleph, he's behitchanenu aleinu lo shamanu. He's screaming, help me, help me. Who's listened to? Reuven's talking, Yosef's talking, Yehuda's talking, Yehuda's listened to. He is the natural leader of the brothers from the beginning to the end, no matter what. He doesn't want it. He's not saying, listen to me, listen to me. He's just naturally listened to. That's his quality. Of course, he has flaws. We know from Perek Lamechet, the lovely story of Yehuda and Tamar, how somehow all of a sudden he's having relations with his daughter-in-law. Really fascinating. But he has a flaw of women, which takes us throughout Tanakh. Almost every single sketchy woman story, besides the Reuven and Bilhah that we just mentioned, every character is a Yehuda character. That takes him from beginning to end. But the strength of Yehuda in that story is he admits his mistakes. Sadkami many. He could have said, burn her, shh, don't let anyone know, right? No one would have known a difference. He says, no, I get, and that's a strong person to stand up and say, I will admit it. And not just that. We know from later, he raised these children in his home. He stared at these children every day saying, I know what I did, and I'm living with you, and I'm okay with that. That's a very strong character, and that's the strong character of Yehuda. Clearly, we have two episodes where we see his strength to the utmost. Once is when he faces his father, and once is when he faces his brother Yosef. With his father, right, his father doesn't want to send Binyamin. Yehuda gets up there and basically twice, he's persistent, he's a good leader, says to his father, send us or we'll all die. He's strong, he's fearless to say that to his father, and his father trusts him and chooses him to take down Binyamin. And now Binyamin's being taken away by Yosef, and the speech, you should read the speech, it is unbelievable speech what he gives to Yosef, where he's basically saying, you said this, you did this, it's your fault, don't take Binyamin away from us, take me instead, which is also very strong to say, I'll live my whole life in prison so that I can have Binyamin back. And he puts Yosef to tears. To me, it's fascinating. Yosef, the head of Mitzrayim, and Yehuda, the nothing, he makes Yosef break. Fascinating. And of course, at the end, we know Yehuda gets sent first down to Goshen to plan the way. So we know he is clearly looked at the leader by his brothers. He is clearly looked as leader by his own father. His father trusts him with Binyamin. His father sends him down first to Mitzrayim. His father sees him as the leader, and his father, of course, gives him the bracha in Perek Mem Tet of being the leader. Lo yaser shevet mi Yehuda, he becomes the leader. Very, very fast. Throughout Tanakh, we have leaders from Yehuda across the board. Yehuda is the rightful leader. But as I said before, he doesn't want it, so he doesn't step up for it. So there are moments in our history where we don't have a Yehuda leader because he's not being the leader he should be, and that's when Yosef kind of comes to fill in the gaps. But in Shemos through Devarim, yes, we have our leaders, Moshe and Aaron, but we have many Yehuda characters. Nachshon ben Aminadav, our first, which is so a Yehuda character, the Gemara tells us he jumped into the Yam Suf first. That's a Yehuda character. I don't care, I'll jump in the water. Kalev, he's a Yehuda character. He stands up to those Meraglim, he doesn't care. That's a Yehuda character. And he's also the one that destroys every last enemy that's in Yehuda's territory in Sefer Shoftim. Nobody else destroys all their enemies. Yehuda does, and they're led by Kalev. Hor, his son. We don't know much about Hor. We know in the War of Amalek he held one of Moshe's hands up, and we know that by Matan Torah he was put in charge. But Rashi tells us, and Chazal tells us, he stood up to the people wanting to do Chet Egel, and he said, no, you cannot worship that Egel, and they killed him for it. That's a Yehuda character, right? And we have, of course, Bisala, who builds the Mishkan, getting Chachma and Bina and all that. When we get to Sefer Shoftim, we have a lot of Yehuda characters. Actually, we don't. We should have a lot of Yehuda characters. When the story begins, we say, God, who's our leader? Mi ala lanu. And God says, Yehuda. Yehuda's going to lead you. And the problem is, we do start off with Yehuda. Otniel ben Kenaz, strong shofi, destroys our enemies, all is good. I'm going to go. 5 minutes. 5 minutes?
1.5.
Okay, I really can't.
I know, but we...
Okay, I'm trying. Okay. Oh, I have a plan. Okay. Okay, so what happens here in Sefer Shoftim is we have one or two, really, Shoftim from Yehuda, but the problem is that then Yehuda drops out. Yehuda doesn't. We have 119 years in Sefer Shoftim, and we went through of Yosef, because Yehuda doesn't step up to the plate when he should. But then Yehuda does come back in, and sadly we're missing a whole bunch of people for David, for Shlomo being king, and they personify Yehuda. I mean, the one who stands up to the giant, right? The one that is the strongest character, David, right? That's a Yehuda character, Shlomo as well. Both have women issues, both admit to their mistakes, Chasasi LaHashem, but clearly that's a Yehuda character. But what's fascinating to me, and this is my conclusion here, is that when you look through Tanakh, you see kind of this dialectic of these three. Reuven, who wants it, can't have it. So both of his bechorah goes to Yosef. His leadership goes to Yehuda. And Yehuda and Yosef kind of bounce off each other throughout history. We have high times of Yosef, high times of Yehuda, and they kind of go together. And the beautiful ending, just to sum up in this, look at the psukim of Yechezkel, where the ending is, in the time of Mashiach, Yechezkel is told, take two sticks, one label Yosef, one label Yehuda, put them together, and they should become one stick. The ending is, Mashiach ben Yosef is supposed to come before Mashiach ben David of Yehuda. They're supposed to be together. Their leadership, it's not Yehuda's supposed to be the leader and Yosef's not supposed to. They're supposed to. They help each other. Together, they are harmonious, right? Yehuda has women issues. Yosef clearly doesn't. Yosef has power corruption issue. Yehuda really doesn't. They blend together to be the perfect form of power and of leadership for the Jewish people, which is why we are promised, La'atid lavo yeh shalom ben shnei mashichim ehalalu. There will be shalom between these two mashichim, because that is our future. Yehuda and Yosef put together. together as one. I'm so sorry I went over, but thank you very, very much.